Back at the Pleasant Street Tea Company, I'm Rick Moore, along with Heather Atwood. This is MSO News Sports, and the story behind the recipe, the other cape, food for thought, it's all out there.
Yep, the mid-pod. There was once the mid-pod. Yep. Yeah, right. No, okay. All those things, yep.
All right, so what do we got cooking today?
Well, I thought...
Did you notice how I said that? What do we have cooking today?
You're so clever.
I know.
So I thought that today we would talk about chocolate, because next week is Valentine's Day.
Perfect.
And people think of Cape Ann as a destination for fried fish sandwiches and lobster rolls and things like that. But in fact, we have this amazing legacy of chocolate makers. And they are still in business. Three generations, two businesses on Cape Ann that have been making chocolate for more than three generations.
I know one of them.
Okay.
That's on 128, right?
Yep, that's it.
Nichols Candies.
Yep. All right. And they have a great story. So it was, all this happened, like all my stories today happened in some strange nexus of like 1929 to 1934.
No way.
Yep, the whole thing. So in 1932, Walter and Margaret Nichols opened a candy shop in Gloucester. And it did really well. But then they were young and they left for a little bit and they came back. And they reopened their candy shop in downtown Gloucester. And it did really well. There's a movie theater. You know, people went to Gloucester. There were all kinds of shopping experiences, department stores. It was a center, right? Mm-hmm. So their candy shop did really, really well. And it moved a couple of times. So it was in different places in Gloucester. Mm-hmm. And then after the war, Walter Nichols had the presence of mind to buy a piece of land on 128. And he was really smart. In the beginning, they opened a candy shop there in 1954, and in the beginning it was really slow because they had been downtown with all that hustle and bustle. Mm-hmm. But they anticipated the arrival of tourists. And that's really when the tourist industry began to boom in Gloucester, and people came here. And guess what was sitting right there to welcome them but Nichols Candies.
And 128 opened up around 1957 or 58, somewhere around there. So that was a good timing for them. They must have known that the highway was probably being built at that time.
That must have been it. Yeah. I didn't read about that, and I didn't know that date. But he seemed to see that something was going to happen there.
Yeah, yeah. It was the late 50s when 128 opened up.
So today, their grandson, what's his name? Well, their grandson and their great-grandson are running that business. And have you been there recently?
Of course.
I love that place. To go in there, and it feels just like so old-fashioned, where they, you know, you point out what you want, and the attendees pick up little pieces.
And they can do stuff custom-made, too, can't they, for parties and things like that? Do I have that place right?
Yeah. Yeah, and they have a man-at-the-wheel chocolate, plate that you can get that is beautiful.
Okay.
So, I have loved seeing that Nichols Candy sign there ever since I started coming to Cape Ann, right? It's such a cheerful...
It's as iconic, I think. Well, not quite as the fisherman, but pretty close.
Yeah, it is. So, can you guess the second one? Family-owned, three generations of chocolate makers or candy makers?
I was thinking Turtle Alley, but there's Turtle Alleys all over the place, so I don't know.
Well, Turtle Alley is my number three mention because it's incredible. And that is, we could call that a family business because Hallie Baker started Turtle Alley. She had been an artist. And as an artist, she had worked sort of as a job to make a living at Pride's Crossing Confections. Mm-hmm. So that's where she learned about chocolate making. And she opened her own business, I don't know, actually maybe 15 years ago.
Mm.
And her turtles, have you ever had one of those?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. They are just amazing. And the really brilliant thing about Hallie Baker is she has one of those super palates where she can taste flavors. Really, you wouldn't even begin to know how to pronounce this. But she has an incredible ability to taste flavors and understand flavors and how things go together. So you think about that when you go into Turtle Alley and you see her flavor combinations because they're very creative and they're really good.
Okay. So what's number two?
Tux in Rockport.
What is it?
Tux Candies in Rockport. Of course.
I was thinking Gloucester, of course, yes.
Yeah, no, we're talking Cape Ann.
Okay.
So, three generations of chocolate makers, and they do candy canes at Christmas, which I absolutely love. And it's... Dan Tuck is now the third generation. So isn't that pretty amazing?
Yeah,
we don't have many businesses on Cape Ann with generations of makers, and that's two of them,
if not three. Yeah, it is. And,
of
course, Tux is iconic as well. And, it's not chocolate, but it just triggered a memory of my dad at Christmas time. He used to love ribbon candy, and I thought that was the worst stuff in the world. That and what do you call those, the jelly gummy things, you know, the little jelly gummy things with the sugar on them?
Jelly beans?
No, not jelly beans.
With sugar on
them. I forget what they were. I can't remember that. But anyway, he loved that stuff.
And Nonpareil?
No.
But jelly candy with sugar. I don't know that one. But, you know, it really was an art form. And that's what we forget because, right. You know, food is just everywhere. And you go to the grocery store and you're bombarded by colors and flavors. But these people started doing this, again, 1929, 1932. And it was, the machinery was new to make all these things. And it was must have been pretty exciting to see ribbon candy made, right?
And people who leave Cape Ann want you to ship them from Tux, and they want you to ship them candy from Nichols. It's and they want you to ship lobsters as well.
Yeah,
but
right.
it is pretty cool. Well, that's amazing. I certainly didn't know that about Nichols going that. And Tux goes back how far?
1929. Yeah.
You don't want chocolate?
No. I, you know what? I would take. Never mind.
Valentine's. You just want flowers.
No, Valentine's Day. Okay, so we've got candy for Valentine's Day,
yeah.
Tux, Turtle Alley, and Nichols.
Right.
All right, okay. And those are three. I didn't realize you know, how far back they go. Okay, now.
Wonderful, authentic, historical sources for Valentine's.
Yeah, absolutely.
And delicious, yeah.
And local,
right, shop right. Local.
And we got to move on here. So numbers 22 and 21.
Okay, I'm going to talk mostly about 22. All right, because okay. 22 kind of follows our conversation about chocolates.
Mm-hmm.
Number 22 of the 50 best foods in America are s'mores. And believe it or not, I have so much to say about s'mores. Okay?
This is great because this is another thing that I don't care for. I do not like s'mores, but everybody on the planet does. So here
right,
we go.
Right, that is really amazing. But let's just get into it, okay?
Go.
So we're going to start with marshmallows. Marshmallows date back to the ancient Greeks and Romans. Okay, is that not incredible?
That is amazing.
The ancient Greeks and Romans had a source, there was a plant source that they used medicinally, and it was something, in Latin, it's called Althea officialis, okay? And that plant grows in marshes, and the first time it is documented in the English language is in the year 1000. In the Saxon mm-hmm. alphabet or vocabulary, right? So, and it's in that year, around 1000 in the Saxon language,
mm-hmm.
it's referring to this plant that grows in marshes, marshmallow.
Marshmallow, right.
Okay, and it's a different spelling, but it's like mm-hmm. marshmallow, and then it mm-hmm. sort of morphs through the English language to become marshmallow.
Wow.
And it was still being used medicinally, but it was the French turned it into a confection. And that confection kind of turned, you know, made it through Europe
mm-hmm.
and this marshmallow thing
mm-hmm.
happened,
wow.
right? Isn't that incredible?
Yep.
So
almost as old as popcorn.
There you go, exactly. So not only that, we have the graham cracker. Okay, the
mm-hmm.
graham cracker,
mm-hmm.
that's part of a s'more. Graham crackers were created, believe it or not, we're getting back to Valentine's Day, to suppress sexuality. I'm not kidding. I have to get to my notes.
If I had known that, I never would have had one. I knew there's a reason I don't like graham crackers, too,
right?
But all right.
Sylvester Graham, in the early 19th century in New Jersey, he was a Presbyterian minister, and he was offended by too much sexuality in our culture. And he believed that came from men drinking too much wine and eating red meat. So he developed the graham cracker, and he said that, you know, they should have this every day, and we will have a better society if people are regularly eating this diet of a bland, dry cracker made of graham flour. Isn't that amazing?
Mm-hmm. That
okay,
is,
so
yeah.
the chocolate we talked about, right?
That's Hershey bars usually?
It is Hershey bars usually, yeah. So, mm-hmm. So we have a marshmallow.
Mm-hmm.
Dating back to the ancient Greeks and Romans.
Right.
We have graham crackers dating back to the early 19th century
mm-hmm.
with the whole, like, you know, sexuality thing.
Yep.
And then marshmallows began to be roasted. That became a thing. And they actually, like, in the 1890s, people started toasting marshmallows on sticks mm-hmm. over campfires. And in Asbury Park, New Jersey, there was actually a contest to draw young people around this this park to toast marshmallows, and they said it was an excellent medium for flirtation, since people could nibble off each other's sticks. There's so much of Adam's S'more,
I know,
right?
Kind of the counter to the graham cracker,
exactly.
Okay. And then you're going to put them together.
Yeah, with some chocolate. It's just wild how interesting a s'more is. So the first actual documentation of something called a s'more was in 1927. See, we're back to 1927, right? Everything happened then. It was in a Girl Scout publication called Tramping and Trailing with the Girl Scouts. That was the first actual mention of a s'more.
Hmm.
And it was written, this recipe was written by Loretta Scott Crew for the Girl Scouts. And no one has ever since claimed to have, you know, have you know, that was untrue.
Wow.
And August 10th is National S'more Day.
August 10th.
Yep.
Okay. We will celebrate that.
Right.
That is amazing. Oh, my God, the history. All right. And what about 21?
21 is, drumroll, the lobster roll.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yep.
So, and what I have to say about lobster rolls is we all love them here on where in the land of lobsters. The seemingly inflammatory things about lobster roll are whether you butter the side of the roll and toast it or not, or whether you add celery and onion or any ingredients or not. Right, exactly. So that's really all I'm going to say about lobster rolls, right? Because we love them.
I know you're pressed for time, so we'll talk about the other Cape and the resumption of your blog, Food for Thought.
Yeah, well, actually, it has a new name.
Okay.
HeatherAtwood.org.
Okay.
That's where you're going to go. And it's called Shelves.
Shelves?
Shelves. Because I keep, if my blog is going to be like my pantry full of all these recipes I've, and stories I've written over the years.
Perfect. All right. That's Heather Atwood. This is MSO News Sports.